Bhagavad Gita in 3 hours, we'll try to give you as much of an insight as we can. Here in the background, you have Krishna and Arjuna. The Gita is spoken between them, a timeless conversation. Something that only took something in the region of 40 to 50 minutes, but has been studied for centuries by philosophers, by spiritualists, by historians, by anthropologists, by Joe Bloggs, by Will Smith, everyone. So many people have gained wisdom from this wonderful book. And it's really about our inner journey and the journey of life. Unfortunately, at the moment, we're in lockdown, so you may not have been able this summer to go to your favorite seaside, Southend-on-Sea or Brighton or wherever you normally go, Eastbourne. Throughout my life, and especially when I was young, I always liked to go to the seaside. I love to go to the seaside, probably not for the normal reasons. Normally, kids want to go to the seaside so they can build sandcastles, or they want to go and swim in the ocean, or they want to get like candy floss or, you know, other kind of things that are available at the seaside. I was a bit of a different kid, I guess. And the reason I love going to the seaside was I love to sit in front of the ocean. Because whenever I would sit in front of the ocean, and I would see the vastness of that body of water, then in that vision of the ocean, I would almost feel like my whole life was coming into perspective. All my worries that seemed so big, all my difficulties that seemed so insurmountable, all the stresses which played on my mind and tugged at me, all of those things almost fell away. And I realized actually how small all these things are in seeing the vastness of the ocean. And therefore, even as a kid, I would go in front of the ocean and just sit in front of the ocean and be in awe. And I would find it extremely liberating and an extremely purifying and pacifying experience. As I grew on in life, I realized I can't go to the ocean every day to get that perspective, to get that purification, to get that pacification. I have to find another way. And later on in my life, when I came across the scriptures, I realized that the scriptures, and especially the Bhagavad Gita, is just like this ocean. The Bhagavad Gita is so vast. It's so deep. It's such a purifying book, and it can completely pacify everything that you go through in your life. In this way, nowadays, even when in lockdown, we're not able to go in front of the ocean and experience that peace of mind, simply coming in front of the Bhagavad Gita and sacred literature has the same effect. However, it only has that effect if one has developed a relationship with the Bhagavad Gita. It only has that effect if you've invested time and energy in mining, exploring, and discovering this spiritual wisdom. And that's why today is so important, and that's why the opportunities that you have in front of you to explore the Gita are so valuable. Sometimes people ask me, what is the Bhagavad Gita? What is it actually? How would you describe it in a line, in a word? In one sense, the Bhagavad Gita is a theological book. It's one of the most famous religious books in the entire world. It's up there with the Bible, with the Quran, with the Torah. Nearly millions and millions of copies of this religious book have been circulated all over the world. It's a religious classic. But it's also a spiritual book. even those who don't necessarily have a religious denomination, those who don't necessarily come from the traditions of ancient India, those who aren't affiliated with any ism, those who are simply looking for spiritual knowledge, they also come to the Gita and they find universal spiritual truths that relate to their life. But I think it's more than that. It's a philosophical book. It answers questions. It gives you insight. It allows you to look at the world in a different way. It analyzes everything we go through. And it provides fresh insights. It provides a new paradigm. So it's a philosophical book as well. It's also an inspirational book. Mahatma Gandhi said, when doubts haunt me, when disappointments stare me in the face and I see not one ray of hope on the horizon, then I immediately pick up the Bhagavad Gita and I read one verse, and in the midst of overwhelming sorrow, I immediately feel joy and hope and inspiration. It's an inspirational book. But you know, I think it goes beyond all of these things, because someone may say, Bhagavad Gita, a theological book, but I'm not religious. Bhagavad Gita, a spiritual book, but I'm not really that spiritual. Bhagavad Gita, a philosophical book, but I don't really have so many questions. Bhagavad Gita, an inspirational book, but I'm already inspired. I don't need someone to inspire me. I'm doing just fine. And therefore, I say the Bhagavad Gita is all of these things, but in its essence, the Bhagavad Gita is a life companion. Yes, it gives you theology. Yes, it gives you spirituality. Yes, it gives you philosophy. Yes, it gives you inspiration. But what the Gita actually is, and this is the most accurate way in which I would describe it, is something which walks through every event, every emotion, every experience that you go through in life and gives you clarity, gives you perspective. And therefore, even if you're not religious, spiritual, looking for answers, the Bhagavad Gita is an indispensable book. You can't do without it. And really, that's what we want to share with the world. On our journey of life, we hoped it would be like this, isn't it? We're somewhere in life, we know where we want to go, and we have this concept that it's going to be a straight journey. It's going to be plain sailing. It's going to be straightforward. In reality, when we look at our life, we know where we are, and we know where we want to go, and we know what the route is, but there are many, many obstacles, many, many unknown things, many, many events and unplanned situations that confront us on our journey of life. On the chat, can you tell me if you feel like your life is number one or number two? Just put a number into the chat. If you think your life is more like number one, put one. And if you think it's two, then put two. Naresh, Milan, Mahesh, everyone saying two. Praveena, we have a one. Excellent. Praveena, we'll have to get you on the call and maybe we should write a book about your life. And Shriya, you too, maybe. For most of us, the reality is there are many unexpected things going on. Yes, thank you, all your answers coming. Krishna, Chande, two times two. There's so many things we have to encounter in life. How are we going to navigate this journey of life? Tomorrow when we wake up, we have no idea what will happen. 6 months ago when we woke up, we had no idea that coronavirus would have this much of an effect on the world and change our life in this way. So unexpected. Do we think coronavirus will be the final thing that will come up? Without wanting to scare anyone on this call, be ready for more things to come, because that's the nature of life. But is that a bad thing? Is it bad that there are ups and downs in life? Some of you on the call may be medics, you may be nurses, you may work in a hospital, and therefore you'll be familiar with what's on the screen. This right here is an electrocardiogram chart. This is the ECG of a healthy person. Do you notice something about the ECG of a healthy person? There are ups and downs. There are peaks and there's troughs. There is movement. The day that the ECG goes flat is the day we are finito. If the ECG goes flat, it means you are dead. The fact that there is movement means you are alive. Life means movement. Life means change. Life means ups and downs. There is no life without these things. So the question is not, will my life be straightforward or will my life not be straightforward? Life means it won't be straightforward. You see, there are different things in our life. You see these points? There are different points in our life which come, often unexpectedly, that change our life direction. Now I'm going to ask you a question, and I want as many of you as possible to write your thoughts in the chat. Think about your own life or the life of someone you know very, very well. What I want you to tell me is what things happen in our life which cause our life direction to change. What are the most common things that you've experienced that cause us to change the course of our life? Can you give me some things that may happen? DT says death. That was like the first one. The death, hope, I take it you're talking about death of people around us. Shabani says suffering. Ram Lakshman says unrealistic expectations. Shobna says ill health. Mira says marriage. Success, Jasmine says. Naresh says uncertainty. Hannah, trauma. Disappointment, Praveena says. Nita says ill health. Trivikram says job layoffs. Shuddha says trauma, depression. Yes. These are all the things that happen which change the course of our life. These are the five top things that change people's lives. Fortunes, success or failure. Tomorrow, if you have some amazing, astounding success that comes often out of your control, your life changes. Sometimes people become famous overnight, their life changes. Or if some failure comes in your life, what is that going to do to you? It can make you or break you. So one thing that changes our life is our fortunes. Thank you for all your comments. Really appreciate all of you participating. Another big thing that affects your life are decisions. Every day we're making decisions, and every decision changes your course of life. How many decisions are we making every day? Every day we're crafting our destiny through the decisions that we make. Relationships. I think someone on the chat put marriage. The people that we connect with in our life change our life direction. The person you get married to, the people you make friends with, the relationships that you form, the people you open your heart to, and the people you let into your life all have an influence. Death. How much does death change our life journey? We lose people around us. But death doesn't just mean losing people to, like, people dying. Death means the temporality of this world. Things are constantly in flux, changing our body, our health, and doubts. When we get doubts, sometimes this changes our life journey. So what they did in the sociological world was they looked at what are the five main things which determine people's life journey and which change people's life journey. And what they realized was that you could boil it down to these five things: the relationships that you have, the experiences of death around you that you see, the doubts that arise within your heart and how you deal with them, the fortunes that confront you, and the decisions that you make. Your entire life is basically a conglomerate of all of these things, and therefore your path in life is determined. These are all turning points. How many of you on the call are experiencing some of these turning points? Relationships. Maybe some of you on the call have lost a relationship. Maybe some of you on the call are forming new relationships. And whatever it may be, those changes in relationships are going to change your life. Maybe some of you on the call have experienced death, the loss of a loved one recently, or the experience of losing something that you thought would be there forever. How many of you on the call are experiencing doubts, maybe some dissatisfaction in the mind, maybe a sense of lack of purpose, lack of meaning? How many on this call are experiencing fluctuating fortunes, maybe amazing success, maybe a very difficult time, losing in the race of life? And how many of you are confronted on the call right now with decisions you have to make? Yes, Naresh says decisions. These are all turning points. Every one of us on this call, we're all at a turning point. And shall I tell you an amazing thing? These turning points are unstoppable. These will come for every single person. No person can say, "No, no, I don't want to experience death. No, no, I don't want to experience doubts. No, no, I don't want to make any decisions." No, everyone will be forced to confront these things. Not only are these things unstoppable, these turning points are unpredictable. You may think, "Yeah, Sutapa, you're talking about all these things. I'm not confronted with any of these things." Let me tell you, life is unpredictable. Tomorrow morning, you may wake up and the whole game may change. But rest assured, they will come. It's unstoppable in the sense that everyone will experience this. It's unpredictable in the sense that these things can happen at any time. And it's uncontrollable because these things can come in any way. Sometimes it comes in a way that you would never have imagined. So therefore, life means confronted with uncertainty, confronted with unpredictability, confronted with turning points. Now, let me ask you, which education system in the world teaches you how to navigate these turning points? When you have to make a difficult decision in life, is your knowledge of maths going to help you? When you have to decide who you're going to spend the rest of your life with in a relationship, is knowledge of biology going to help you? If tomorrow you wake up and someone you really, really love and care for leaves the world, in order to deal with that situation, is your knowledge of history going to help you? Tomorrow, if you wake up and you have a sense of doubt about your meaning, your purpose, why everything seems okay, but inside you feel unhappy, is your knowledge of geography going to help you? I'm not saying you shouldn't learn maths. I'm not saying you shouldn't learn geography. I'm not saying you shouldn't learn chemistry. But these things, these subjects that we're taught from the day we go into school to the day we leave university, none of these subjects actually help you with dealing with the turning point that every single person will confront, and that every single person's life direction will be defined by. Now tell me, isn't that amazing? Isn't it amazing that the most important and the most influential things in our life, we're not even taught about in school? You know, when you go to school, the first thing they teach you is ABC. Once one man, he went to a monastery and he saw a young monk coming into the monastery in the first day, and the teacher was teaching him. So this man, he went up to the teacher and he said, "What do you teach the kids on the first day in the monastery?" The monk teacher looked back at this man and he said, "What did you learn on the first day that you went to school?" The man said, "I learned ABC." The monk said, "You know what we teach the little monks when they come into the monastery on the first day? We teach them how to breathe. Breathing is what you do from day one in your life to the final moment you're in this life. Breathing is what you experience a change in when you go through all the different emotions and experiences of life." He said, "We think it's pretty important to teach people how to breathe. And yes, we will also teach them how to read and write. But if you don't know how to breathe, how will you even navigate life in the right way?" I thought it was an interesting story, because Srila Prabhupada himself once went to the MIT, the Michigan Institute of Technology, and said, "Where is the department in this university which teaches you who you really are and what the purpose of life really is?" And everyone was silent. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita comes to save the day. It's explained in a beautiful verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Raja Vidyam Raja Guyam Pavitram Idamutamam Pratyaksha Vagamam Dharmyam Susukham Kartum Avyayam. Krishna says, this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita is the king of all knowledge, the most secret of all secrets. It's the purest knowledge. And because it gives direct perception of the self and inner joy, it's the very perfection of any religion or spirituality. So now, the Gita, as I mentioned in the beginning, is a life companion, because the Gita is going to teach you how to deal with all of these turning points. Now, what I want to ask you on the chat is, can you tell me, what do you think are the main subjects within the Gita that help you to understand or navigate these situations? From your understanding of the Gita, what do you think the Gita contains as subject matters that help us to decode and deal with all of these situations? Anushri says identity. Ram says karma. Rupa says Atma. Bhikkhu says Yoga. Yeah, these are all really good points. Sonam says Bhakti. Thank you so much. Rupa says Direction. Suparna says Compassion. Madhuri says Dharma. Really good. These are all good points. Yeah. as you type in all of these things on the chat, we begin to get a sense of what the scope of the Bhagavad Gita really is. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for all your points. Really nice. Krishna, in the Gita, gives a blueprint of reality. And what he essentially says in the Gita is that we can cover the entire philosophy of life and understanding of the world, life, the universe, and everything. We can cover it in five topics, Krishna says. One of those topics that Krishna covers in the Gita is Atma. Another topic that he covers is Prakriti, or the world that we're living in. Another topic that Krishna covers is karma, or action. Another topic that Krishna covers is kal, or time, the nature of time. And Krishna also talks about Ishvara, God. Now this is incredible, and this is not just coincidental. The five bubbles that you see on the top are the turning points that define people's lives. This is not coming from the Gita, by the way. The top five bubbles are coming from the research of social scientists. The five topics on the bottom are what Krishna covers in the Gita. Now, if you look very, very closely, and if you look very, very sagaciously at this, then you'll realize that these are the five topics which actually help you to deal with the five biggest turning points that everyone will encounter in their life. When we have doubts, who am I? What's my purpose? What's my meaning? Why am I not satisfied? Krishna comes and saves the day by teaching us who we really are and what our purpose is, who we are in essence. That will help you to clarify your doubts about meaning and purpose. When we look at the world and wonder out about our fortunes and why there are so many ups and downs and how to utilize all the different situations and success and failure that we encounter, Krishna gives you knowledge of this world. Why is the world wired in a certain way? When you know why the world is wired in a certain way, then when you encounter different fortunes, you'll be able to deal with it. Decisions. We're making decisions all the time. Someone would say, how do I know what decisions to make? Therefore, Krishna gives a model of karma. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Every decision counts. Therefore, Krishna gives a whole framework by which we should understand how to come to any conclusion about what direction we should take in life. We're worried about death. Naturally, no one wants to die. Therefore, Krishna gives a whole description of time, the nature of time, why things decay, why things dwindle, and why things ultimately disappear. Krishna gives us the knowledge behind why everything is so transitory in this world. And that helps us to digest death. And we're always wondering about relationships. Who should I have a relationship with? How should I have a relationship with them? Therefore, Krishna begins by saying, if you know your connection or relationship with the Supreme, then every other relationship will make sense. Then every other relationship will be fulfilling. Then you'll know how to approach every other relationship in life. So let me now ask you to just reflect on that for a moment. How amazing the Bhagavad Gita is that it helps you to navigate every single turning point. Just to give you a sense of, please send your questions in. I'm just speaking here, and we are going to have a lot more interaction. So please do send your questions in. And if you like, you can send your questions directly to Kanchanabja. He's on the panel. And if you would like them to be private questions and you don't want to put it on the public chat, by all means, send the questions directly to Kanchan Abja. He's on the panelist list, because we're going to have a good question and answer on this later on. This is how Krishna defines universal reality. He begins in the Gita by saying, you're not this body, you're the soul. The second thing is Krishna says, as a soul, you are temporarily embodied, not only in this physical machine of the material human body, but also you're encaged within this world. And so the next thing Krishna begins to describe in the Gita is the world around us, nature, prakriti, we say in Sanskrit. As spirit souls in the world of the material nature, we're not inactive. Rather, we're active all the time. Every moment we're doing something, we're planning. And therefore, Krishna explains that when the soul acts in this world, for every action, there's a reaction. And that will determine your destiny. And therefore, you have to know the science of how to act in the world. Otherwise, how do you know your actions are going to lead to more happiness, more fulfillment, and more satisfaction and well-being? The next thing Krishna explains is that this whole system of the soul in the world performing activities takes place within a time frame. And that time frame goes in cycles. We're born, and then later on we die, and then we're reborn again. The world comes, the world disappears, and then the world comes again, just like the changing of seasons. And then Krishna says, outside of this whole system is the overseer, God, Krishna himself. And we have a connection with that supreme reality and that supreme person. And the way to reestablish that connection is yoga, which means to connect. So this is it. This is like the blueprint of life. If you understand each of these five things, you can understand everything about reality. If you look at modern science, they don't really know anything about our deeper identity. They don't really know anything about the Supreme. They have some knowledge of karma, kala and time and its effects. They have some knowledge of the world. But karma, they also don't have knowledge of that on a more subtle level. So by modern science, you only get some picture of reality. And even that picture of reality is very, very limited. However, the Gita opens you up to a bigger picture of reality, which then allows you to put everything in place. For a few minutes, let me just reflect on each of these five topics. Identity. Who are we? Sounds like a simple question, but an elusive question. Everything begins here. Here's a famous quote. I'm not who I think I am. I'm not who you think I am. I'm who I think you think I am. So just think about that for a second. This is very deep. It has a very deep connotation. It has a very deep lesson for our life. So much of our identity is built upon conceptions of others. And not just conceptions of others, but our conceptions of what conceptions people have of us. Look at your life today and ask yourself, how much of who I think I am was molded by my family? How much of who I am was molded by my friends? How much of who I am was molded by the media? How much of who I am was molded by the culture, the tradition of the society that I grew up in? And then ask yourself, how much of who I am is authentic to what I actually feel and what I actually, in my essence, believe I am? Sometimes in the noise of the world, in the opinions, in the pressures, in the expectations of everything around us and everyone around us, we forget who we are. And therefore, the first thing Krishna says to Arjuna is step back and first understand who you are. This body and all the labels that go with it and all the temporary identities and personas and avatars that you assume are all transitory and ethereal. You are something much deeper. And this knowledge that you are a spiritual being beyond the gross material and the subtle material, this is incredibly empowering knowledge. Krishna also talks about the world that we're living in. This world, which is so vast, which is so complicated, which is such a network. Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. And one man, a woman, in his time, plays many parts. So Krishna goes on to explain in the Gita about this material world that we're living in. Why is it here? How was it created? How does it influence us? How do we deal with all the different fortunes that this material world brings us? When you have knowledge of the purpose of this world, then you can navigate this world in a much better way. And therefore, the next thing then Krishna goes on to speak about here is the material world that we're living in. The material world is essentially a university, it's a school, it's a place in which we're actually here to educate, evolve, and edify ourselves. However, most people don't understand that. And therefore, some people try to enjoy the world. Other people are trying to escape the world. But Krishna in the Gita says you should learn to engage the world and everything within it in the appropriate way so that you can achieve the real purpose of why you're here. But how will you engage the world in an appropriate way if you first don't even have knowledge of why the world is here? Krishna is saying, step back and understand more about your environment. The next thing that Krishna talks about in the Gita is action. Every day we're making decisions. They say we make 36,000 decisions every single day. Don't ask me how they figured that out, but that's what the scientists say. That's what the neuroscientists say. Every decision we make has an effect on our destiny. Sometimes people ask me, how did you become a monk? And it's interesting because if I look back at my life, I can see different decisions that I made, different actions that all contributed to where I am now. You know, like, I don't know if any of you on the call ever used to read those kids' books where you like open a page and it's like, do you want to do A, B, C, D, or D? And if it's like D, it's like turn to page 32. And then you turn to that page and then, you know, I'm saying, yeah, Ram Lakshman is on the same pages. Our life is like that. Every decision we make, we have to live with it. They say good decisions are hard to make, but easy to live with. And bad decisions are easy to make, but very difficult to live with. And so, we're sometimes not even aware of the consequences of everything we're doing in our life. This is one Buddhist monk, he says, like gravity, karma is so basic, we often don't even notice it. Your whole life can be described by karma. But most people can't even make the connection because they don't have the knowledge. And therefore, what Krishna talks about in the Gita broadly is he talks about karma, which is a general term, but also a specific term for good actions. He talks about vikarma, which means destructive action. And beyond that, he talks about akarma, which is spiritual action. And so Krishna begins to paint a whole picture of how to act and function in this world so that you can get to your desired destination. The other topic Krishna talks about is time, kala. Time and tide wait for no man. How many of us on this call in the last 6 months have experienced the departure of a loved one? So many of us. Krishna helps us to understand how to deal with this transitory aspect of life by giving us knowledge of time. Here's a very famous quote by Steve Jobs. No one wants to die. Even people who want to go to heaven don't want to die to get there. That's how much we're scared of death. And yet death is the destination we all share. No one has ever escaped it. And that is as it should be, because death is very likely the single best invention of life. Just hear that again. Death is perhaps the single best invention of life. It is life's change agent. Krishna talks about time. And what time does in the world, it's an energy, it's Krishna. And what time does is it begins to take away everything that's ethereal, everything that's superficial, everything that's temporary, everything that's simply a shadow. And what time is doing for someone who has knowledge, time is actually revealing to that person what is eternal, what is of substance, what really matters, and what we actually are. And therefore, death is something we all experience around us all the time. But Krishna says when you have knowledge of death, or knowledge of time, then when you experience things like death, you use those experiences to propel you forward to a more meaningful life. For example, when you have knowledge and you experience death, instead of becoming depressed, it helps you to prioritize. Death is something which can help you to remember what is really important before my clock runs down. Death doesn't just bring priority, but it brings urgency. When we experience someone leaving this world, we realize my time in this world is also limited. Therefore, how can I waste time? Perhaps one of the worst things we can do in life is to waste time. Death also brings immunity. In life, we have so many fears, we have so many anxieties, we have so many inhibitions, we have many dreams, but then we have this kind of like something holding us back. In the face of death, all of your fears, all of your inhibitions, all of your anxieties, they almost fade away. Therefore, Steve Jobs used to say, I think about death all the time because death helps me to live a free life. When you realize that and you come to terms with what death is, then no other fear of the world will be able to grip you because there's no fear greater than the fear of death. So once you've confronted and understood and registered that, everything else becomes a piece of cake. And death, Krishna says, actually brings opportunity. Because the wisdom of the Gita explains, death is not a full stop. Death is just a comma. There's more to come. And if you react to death in the right way, then the more to come will be better. The more to come will be more fulfilling. The more to come after your death will actually open up more opportunity. And then, the final thing Krishna talks about in the Gita is God. Outside of this whole system, who is running this whole system? And why does this system exist? And is there somewhere else I'm supposed to go outside of this system? Here's a beautiful quote by C.S. Lewis. If I find in myself desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. So, most times people don't like to talk about God. It's like the G word. Like, oh my God, like everything you said was good until you started speaking about God, because people have a certain conception of God. But what Krishna explains in the Gita is that there is actually no self-realization. There is no significant existential awakening if one doesn't understand who God is. There's no self-realization without God-realization. Both go hand in hand. And what Krishna opens up to us in the Gita is, who is God? What does he look like? What does he do? Where does he live? What is my relationship with him? And most importantly, how can I experience God? The Gita is not just a religious book. It's actually a spiritual science. It gives you a hypothesis, an experiment, and an observation. The Gita is not a book which is just meant to make you believe in God. This is a very, very important point. Probably many of you have probably heard me say this before. The Gita is not just a book which is meant to make you believe in God. It's a book which is meant to empower you to experience the presence of God at every moment in your life. Therefore, it's a spiritual science. It's not a faith. It begins with some faith, but later on, through determined, devoted, patient spiritual practice, one can actually directly experience that interaction with the supreme lovable object. That is the moment where life makes complete sense. We can have all the philosophy, we can have all the knowledge, we can have all understanding, but the moment at which we actually tangibly connect and experience God, Krishna, that's the moment at which everything makes sense again. And the Gita is a book which is meant to bring you to that point. And therefore, can you now see how, yes, we will have those days when we have doubts, when we're wondering, who am I, what's my purpose, what's my meaning? But when we're strongly rooted in the knowledge of the Gita and the soul, all of those doubts will be able to frame them. Yes, we will experience ups and downs, difficulties, days of success, days of failure. But when we understand this world, how it functions, why it's here, then in the midst of all of that, we'll never become hopeless, we'll never become helpless, we'll never become discouraged, we'll never become depressed. But rather, we'll see that whatever is happening, there is a grand scheme behind it. There's a bigger picture. And in that way, every fortune that comes to us, we'll be able to grow from it. Yes, you'll have to make decisions. Sometimes you'll have to make very difficult decisions. Once a man, he wanted to get married, so he went to an astrologer and he said to the astrologer, I don't know, there's two ladies on the horizon. I'm not sure who I should marry. Can you tell me which one will be the lucky one? So the astrologer looked into his crystal ball and looked back at the man and said, you'll marry the first one and the second one will be the lucky one. So it's like this. Life is like this. We have to make decisions all the time. But when we have knowledge of karma and the consequences of our actions, then we can make better decisions with reference point. Otherwise, how are we making decisions in life? Oh, I feel like it, therefore I made the decision. But tomorrow you could feel like something else and you make a completely different decision. So that's not a firm ground. Oh, I decided because everyone around me was telling me to do it. Yeah, that's fine, but you have to live with the decision, not them. So why don't you own the decision? Oh, I made the decision because culturally, traditionally, that's what everyone will expect me to do. But then that means you're not thinking for yourself. So how do we make decisions? What is the framework for making good decisions? Because your decisions determine your destiny. Krishna gives that knowledge. How to deal with death, the impermanence, the transitory nature of this world. Krishna gives us the science of why things go in cycles in time. And relationships, yes. Who should we let into our life? Who should we form close bonds with? Who should we reveal our hearts to? When you know what your ultimate relationship with is, who your ultimate relationship with is, then you can identify people around you and relate to them in the appropriate way. Let the right people into your life, people that know you, people that want the best for you, people that love you. You will be better able to identify what kind of relationships are good, and also you will be able to identify what kind of relationships to let go. Because frankly, some relationships in this world are toxic, yet we continue to hold on to them, and then our life is then dragged into a certain direction. But we must know our relationship first with the root of all existence. And this is what I wanted to share with you today. And now I return back to the ocean. And now what I'd like to share with you as we kind of conclude this first bit of the session is that the Gita is an ocean. In the Sufi tradition, the Muslim Sufi tradition, one disciple came to his guru and he said, I heard that you have mined many jewels from the scriptures. I learned that you have discovered many jewels of wisdom from the scriptures. Can you give me those jewels? The disciple said to the guru. You know what the guru said? He looked back at the disciple and he said, if I would sell those jewels of wisdom to you, you would not have the capacity to buy them. They'd be too expensive. And if I give those jewels to you for free, you will not appreciate them. Therefore, the only solution is that you have to dive into the scripture yourself and find your own jewels. Because these jewels that you get from the ancient wisdom books are the jewels that will help you to guide your life into the direction you want it to go. So the scriptures are like an ocean. Now the question remains for each one of us. Am I going to sit in front of my computer screen and adore this ocean in front of me? That's nice. You get some gratification from that. You could go a little further and say, well, maybe I'll be like this lady right here. I'll just kind of dip my toes into the ocean. That's nice. Or you could go a step further and say, well, I'm going to start swimming in the ocean. I'm going to go into the middle of the ocean. That's even nicer. But there are a few unique people, Krishna says in the Gita, Manushyanam sahasreshu kashkin yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kashkin mam veti tatvata. Krishna says some people observe the ocean. Some people dip their toes into the ocean. Some people swim in the middle of the ocean, but they're still on the surface. But there are a rare few people who go deep into the ocean, go to the seabed of the ocean, explore, discover, spend time to actually, an effort to actually find what's going on in there. And at the bottom of the seabed, they find pearls and jewels. So what do you want your relationship with the Bhagavad Gita to be? What do you want your relationship with these spiritual literatures to be? You want it to be one of appreciation? Then you can just sit and watch the ocean. Do you want it to be one of some knowledge? Then you can be like this lady on the shore who's just dipping her toes in. Do you want to be someone who analyzes it and really understands it? Then you'll be the person swimming in the middle of the ocean, but on the surface. But if you go deep, that means to not just study it, to not just understand it, but to live it and implant it within your heart. And if you're able to do that, then you get the jewels of knowledge, the jewels that will keep you going on. This is the greatest gift of life. I was just speaking the other day to my good friend Janakinath. Some of you may know him. He's also a monk here. And I don't think he'll mind me sharing with you that he's actually in a situation where he has cancer. And he's going through chemotherapy. And we often talk and reflect on life and many, many challenges he's going through in his life. And as we were speaking some days ago, we were talking about how the Gita is that thing, the knowledge of the Gita is that thing which can keep you going, and not just keep you going, but keep you going in a joyful way in life, no matter what. But what we reflected on is that it's only because we were fortunate to have that opportunity to take the time and study those books that we now, by the grace of our teachers, have that connection with these books. And what we're really sharing with everyone on the call today is please, please take time in the busyness of life, in the demands and pressures and responsibilities which pursue each one of us in this world. Let us not forget to invest time in that education that will help you to navigate all of this. Because it's an indispensable education. And any time you spend in this education, the benefit that you will get in your life will be incredible. So that's what we're sharing with you today. And at the end of this call, we're also going to share with you that we do have a Gita Life course coming up. And in this Gita Life course, you'll look at all of those five topics, you'll look at all of these scenarios, and you'll begin to be able to explore this knowledge in a much deeper way. And therefore, to everyone on this call, we're offering the opportunity that come forward, make the time. Take the effort. We could always say, I'll do it next year. I'll do it later on in my life. I can't do it now. It's lockdown. And Will there ever be a good time to do this? Now is the time. Mahatma Gandhi said, if there's a good thing and you can do it today, why wait till tomorrow? And in my life, someone used to say something to me, which helped me to look at life in a different way. And he often used to say that 20 years from now, you'll be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than the things that you did do. Therefore, most of the time when we have these opportunities, just take them, because something amazing will come from it, and you won't regret it.
I'm coming, you know, we're coming to your discourse today. I could go to another one next week and another one the week after, and they could be giving me different interpretations of the Bhagavad Gita. So how do I know which Bhagavad Gita teachers are going to give me the right guidance, or the guidance that Krishna had intended to give to Arjuna all those 5,000 years ago?
Well, the first thing I'd reply, I'd just come back to that question in a second. I've just noticed on the chat, Crystal said that I struggle to have association of others because I don't know others in the UK other than online. But Crystal, one thing we can say to you is it's your lucky day. That every good salesman says that, right? But this is a time when we can connect online, because even if there were people close to you, you probably wouldn't be able to meet them anyway. So now is a great time. Because of the world situation, we've opened up all of this spiritual knowledge online and really connect, and we can have a significant exchange like that. So don't feel, Crystal, that that's a barrier for you. Now, Kanchanabja, coming back to your point about how do we know who's an authentic teacher of the Gita? The first thing I want to say, and which is probably the most basic point, is that ultimately you just have to try different teachers.
Mm.
It's like there are doctors who are quacks out there. Hopefully not many of us on this call don't have a direct experience. But we read about in the news that there are quacks. There are those who are not qualified. Does that mean you'll never go to a doctor again? No, it just means you have to exercise caution, but you'll need to go to a doctor at some point. So the fact that there are those who are swindlers or who are not exactly representing properly doesn't mean that we throw the baby out with the bathwater. Now, when you're looking for a teacher, you have to look for someone who's not just speaking it, but who's living it. The Gita is ultimately something to be lived, and it should reflect in the life of the teacher. So that's something you can look at. Is what the teacher is saying, is that their own ideas, opinions, or is that authentic in the lineage of teachers? That's also something to look at. What about the students who have learned under that teacher? What are they experiencing? Are they coming closer to spiritual awareness? That's also another good measure. So like this, there are many, many ways and means by which we can authenticate who is a genuine teacher like that.
Okay. So we're looking at the teacher himself or herself, where they've learned from, and their students, how have they progressed? And we can, and ultimately, we have to make our own judgment. Is that right?
Yeah. Ultimately, you have to try, and you'll know, actually, when you're connected with an authentic teacher, because you'll begin to feel that very strong inspiration and spiritual connection.
Okay.
And so the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. No puddings today, but yeah. You get the point. Yeah. You just have to try. You have to, just like anything in life.
Okay. So some sort of, is it just a feeling?
It's a feeling which is also scientifically verified. So for example, if you remember on that slide, I explained the Gita is hypothesis, experiment, and conclusion. And so what Krishna outlines in the Gita is that if you learn this knowledge and apply it in a certain way, then you will experience certain things in the way you, in the way you are, your character, in your sense of consciousness and how you react to situations, in your general feeling and mindset of positivity And what you'll be able to do is read all of those things in the Gita and then look at your life and say, oh, wow, this is actually, I see it in front of me. It works. So the Gita is a book not just to be learned on the level of the intellect. You should see it in action.
Thank you. So, sorry, I just got a visit from a little wasp, and you know, I'm just. So, in terms of this positivity, there's been quite a few comments on the chat about this, that we're experiencing the Bhagavad Gita. We've made a little start in our spiritual journey. We're feeling happy. We're feeling positive. But there are people around us, and the people around us are negative about our spirituality, negative about our transformation or our desire to transform. So how can we deal with the people around us who are close family members or close friends or work colleagues that are almost trying to knock us down or push us off this path?
Yeah. This is a very, very practical point, and this is something which many of us do go through, and many of us face this challenge. Now, one thing is that patience is required. You know, people are going through their own things in life. They're going through their own challenges. They're going through their own ups and downs. And oftentimes, somehow, they can end up taking that out on you. So one real important thing for a spiritualist is to be very, very patient with people, understanding that they are going through what they're going through. On a practical level, we have to know how to interact with others in an appropriate way. There is a way in which you can be around people, fulfill responsibilities, do your duties, as it were, but not necessarily open your heart so that they can influence you in a way that you would not like to be influenced. And that's an art. It's an art to be able to relate to people without necessarily allowing them to influence you. And the Gita teaches us how to do that very much through our mindset and how we actually interact. So that's another very, very important point. And, you know, sometimes what it is a matter of, and this can seem like a very lofty spiritual point, but one U.S. president, I think it was Abraham Lincoln, he said, I kill all of my enemies. I kill them by making them my friends. And what the Gita very much talks about is how when we develop saintliness, when the best of us comes out, then people around us, and maybe not all people, there'll still be some who won't respond to that, but many, many people around you who are negative, who are, you know, inimical, by your saintliness, by your spiritual inspiration, by your aura, by your energy, and by your positivity, rather than them influencing you, you end up influencing them. And therefore, the members of the Gita, those who live and read the Gita, have to be practitioners and embodying the principles, and that will change people around them.
Wow. So it's not about, actually, we're kind of transforming it from being influenced by these people to have so much spiritual potency that we can almost influence them to take a higher path.
Yeah.
And how would I, is it a case of being patient or how, because when we take the spiritual life, we get excited about it. And in that excitement, we might put others off. Because, you know, we found the path and you haven't found the path kind of thing. How can we almost be able to not put others off in our excitement of this new path that we have found?
Yeah, naturally, like many of you are on this call, many of you are into your journey with the Gita and on your spiritual journey, and And many of you will experience that there are individuals around you who are a little bit skeptical, who are a little bit worried, who are a little bit on edge. Like, why on a Sunday morning are you tuning into a talk on the Bhagavad Gita? That sounds a bit too much. And what it is often is that those who have spent their life with you, they may be worried that you're changing. And they may be worried that because you're changing, they won't be able to relate to you in the same way. And that's sometimes a very valid worry that people have. And therefore, when we're going on our spiritual journey, although internally we must progress and advance our journey, externally, in the way we deal with others, we have to be very understanding, very empathetic, very patient, and try to allay any concerns they may have. And as I said, try to, you know, like when you're around negative people, there's three things that could happen. One is that you could descend into their negativity, and that's obviously the worst thing. The other thing you could do is just create distance and say, well, I don't want to deal with this person. That's probably not as bad as the third one, but, you know, a bit better. But better than that, you can say, I'm going to bring this person up. The German poet Goethe, he said, treat someone as they can. Treat someone as they are, and they'll remain as they are. Treat someone as they can and should be, and they'll become what they can and should be. And really, the Gita is empowering us with a spiritual strength and inspiration that makes sure we don't go down. That means we don't also have to always run away, but rather we can be in the midst of such people who are sometimes inimical and negative, but we lift them up. And that's a very rewarding and beautiful thing to see.
Wow. So we can lift them up with our desire almost to see them improve at the same time. As
our desire and our own spiritual example. Oftentimes to inspire people is not what you say, but it's who you are. Assisi, St. Francis of Assisi, he said, I preach every day. I preach week in, week out. I've been preaching year after year. And now and again, I say something. And another person says, I can't hear what you're saying because your character is speaking so loud. So often, the most inspirational thing is who you've become as a result of this spiritual wisdom. That will transform people's perceptions and hearts.
Okay, yeah. So it's who we've become, our example, our maturity in spiritual life, that will kind of calm down others' doubts and others' negativity. While we're doing this, or while we're trying to do this, these people around us will and can say things that not just negative, but almost critical. And when someone criticizes us, we feel maybe sometimes defensive. And when we are defensive, we may attack them back. So it's almost, in one sense, you're fighting two battles. One, to become a better person. And two, to just kind of be able to withhold the tension coming our way or the attack coming our way. So how can we, if we're not quite there yet naturally, how can we practically try or do, what can we say, what can we do to shield ourselves, shield our hearts from the verbal abuse that might be coming towards us while we're trying to make this spiritual progress?
Yeah, you see, the word yoga, one of the meanings of the word yoga is balance. And one of the key teachings of the Gita is balance and how to balance all the different things in life. And one of the amazing teachings Krishna gives is that we have to have a balance between active life and still life. He says we have to have a balance between time with people and time alone. And what you'll notice in the material world today, in the modern world, is that we have a lot of active time and we have a lot of people time, but we have very less still time and very less alone time. And so your ability to deal with people's negativity is also going to be proportionate to how much time you've spent in solitude, in stillness, bolstering your own spirituality. Sometimes people say, if someone comes to me and says, I don't have time to meditate every morning for 10 minutes, then I look at the person and say, then you have to meditate for 20 minutes. Like, that's an indispensable part of life, to have that time alone, to have that time when you're still, to have that time when you get inspired, so that when you're confronted with all of those things, neither do you react, neither are you influenced by it, but the best of you comes out. Have you noticed on a busy day how you have a shorter temper? Isn't it?
Yeah.
We all experience that. So as soon as you start building space and time in your life for spiritual nourishment, you'll find that in all other aspects of your life, relationships being one part of that, you'll actually thrive. And that's something we just don't do enough of nowadays.
And so this alone time will help us, because if we have this alone time, we can nourish ourselves spiritually, and by nourishing ourselves spiritually, we naturally can handle what the world throws at us. And like you said, it's unpredictable. It's up, down, up, down, up, down. We don't know what the day is going to chuck at us until we face it. What should we do in that alone time? Because, you know, sometimes you think, okay, all right, tomorrow I'm going to spend time alone. And then I go into this little room and look around me. I'm like, what should I do here? And then I might just like go on to Facebook or YouTube. And then, you know, that alone time might not be as alone as it should be.
Yeah, to disconnect from the world is a principle.
Okay.
Once I often tell this story, once I was in India and I was traveling to meeting many yogis and different people and many spiritual practitioners. And once I came to the kind of holy place and there was a yogi and I said, like, can you give me some advice for spiritual advancement, progress? And he looked at me and was like, every year, disconnect for 1 month. Every week, disconnect for 1 day. And every day, disconnect for 1 hour. Disconnect to connect.
Okay.
And it was almost like, you know, it was like TEDx style, you know? It was really one of those like sound bites. It was really good. And I always remembered that disconnect to connect. So when you go into your room, when you go into solitude, you're disconnecting from the world, so that you can connect to God, so that you can connect to the divine, so that you can connect to Krishna, so that you can connect to the spiritual energy. And how do you make that connection? That's where the Bhagavad Gita comes in. That's where the meditation that the Bhagavad Gita teaches comes in. That's where your own spiritual relationship building comes in. And basically, the Gita will basically train you what to do in that time. And there are practices and methods and things that spiritualists do every single day. Like I've had the good fortune of living here in the temple. And for the past nearly 2 decades, we have the same morning routine. And you think, like, how can you keep doing the same thing every single day? The fact is, it's not the same thing, because it just looks like the same thing externally, but internally it's a constantly evolving experience of discovery. And the Gita empowers you to do that. So you need to forget about the outside world sometimes and explore the inner world. And when you've conquered inner space, then even if you can't conquer the outer space, which none of us can, you'll find the outer space won't affect you.
Okay. So like meditation, reading,
right,
the kind of things.
Meditation, reading, journaling, introspection, reflection. You know, sometimes even breathing. I talked about breathing earlier in this talk, that breath is very much related to one's state of mind. There is value in sitting in a room and breathing consciously. Like, I do an example on this call now, right here. I want everyone on the call to take a deep breath in. Not now, Kanchan, you're drinking. So. Everyone on the call, take a deep breath in. And now take a deep breath out. Now do it once again. Exhale. Now I want to ask you a question. When you breathe in, does your tummy go in or does it go out? Can you just put on the chat? If it's in, put in. If it's out, put out. In or out? When you take a deep breath in, does your tummy go in or out? Please tell me. Okay, in, out, in, out, in, out. Shake it all about. This is very, very, just look at the chat. This is so interesting.
50-50, I think.
It's almost 50-50. That means half of these people on this call are not even breathing properly. What's your answer, Kanchan Abja?
I was breathing in and my tummy was going in. Then I was looking at the chat and I was thinking, actually, I think the tummy needs to be out.
Right? Interesting, isn't it? If you're actually breathing in properly, then naturally that means you're intaking breath and your tummy should be going out, expanding. That's the proper way to breathe. We don't even know how to breathe. No offense to anyone, of course. I'm also fine.
Jeez, thanks, man.
But sometimes you're not even breathing consciously. I know someone's going to come up with an argument why, you know, your stomach should go in, but we won't get into that right now. But suffice it to say, most of the time we're not even breathing properly. That's how unconscious we can live in life. So yeah, spending time alone, you get to actually be conscious again.
I like the point you said, meditating, reading, journaling. Journaling, reflecting is so important because we can, as you gave me this advice a few years back, if we introspect and we journal, then we can actually be true to ourselves, real to ourselves. We can think about what we have read, think about our experiences during our meditation, and this is progressive. And it doesn't then feel that, you know, that we're getting caught up by life. We're stepping out a little bit, and that experience has been great. So thank you for that advice you gave me those years ago. Another thing that's been coming up on the chat today is what you mentioned, the five topics. I'm just going to pick. I'm not going to do it in the order you said, because I just want to make sure that we cover this point, because a lot of people have been asking about this. Is this point of action, karma, and decision making? How do I know? It's like we say, you know, you make a good decision, they're hard to make, but it's easier to live with. But sometimes the easy decisions are just so hard to make, and they're still hard to live with, you know. So how is it that we can make, what should we do to make a good decision?
In a famous book, which some people on this call may have read, The 7 Habits of Highly Successful People, one of the principles is start with the end in mind. Start with why. Most of us in life, no, I don't say most of us in life, but some of us in life may not actually have a very clear purpose, a very clear direction, a very clear understanding of what we define as success. The first and foremost thing in life is, if someone would just think about, everyone on the call, think about this. If someone today would come up to you and say, what is success in your life? Would you be able to say it like that, in a line? What, this is success for me in life? I hazard a guess that most of us are not able to clearly define it. Now, if you don't know what is success in your life, if you don't know what your ultimate vision is, if you don't know what you're aiming for, then every decision will be difficult because you have no reference point. But the moment you have a reference point of this is what I'm trying to achieve in my life, then decisions become easier because in every decision, all you have to ask yourself is, will it take me closer to my goal or will it take me further away from my goal? And there you have your decision. Now,
Okay.
even within that, there's complexity because there could be two right answers. But then you have to ask yourself which one long term. But the point I'm making here, you get my point, that first we have to have a reference point, and then decisions become easier. So the scriptures, what they do is they help you to step back from the picture of life and help you to see what's the bigger picture going on here. And when you see the bigger picture, then all of the smaller things, you see it in that context, so it makes it easier to deal with. So we need perspective to make decisions. Good decisions means good perspective. Bad decisions means bad perspective. A child doesn't want to go to school. It's a bad decision because they've got a small perspective. They don't see the bigger picture. An Olympic athlete who undergoes all kinds of things that are difficult to do makes the hard decision to do that because they've got a bigger picture of winning the gold medal. So this is the point. This is the first point I want to make, that good decisions come from having a very clear goal in life. So let us all deeply think. If someone was to ask me, what is your goal in life, would you be able to define it clearly? And the second thing I want to say is the Gita then helps you through something called Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Guru means a spiritual guide. Sadhu means good spiritual friends around you. And Shastra means the scripture. And one can get very good guidance in terms of what decisions to make in line with their goal by taking the help of these three.
Okay, so a good decision is one that's going to take me closer to my goal. A bad decision is one that's going to take me further away from my goal. And we've got different aspects. So we can Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, like you said, so our teacher, the scriptures, and other like-minded souls around us.
Yeah.
They'll help us make these good decisions.
Right.
Okay, so. And you said, this is something very intriguing. So you said that these decisions are going to help us with our goal. So when we read the Bhagavad Gita, is it that everyone has the same goal, or do we have different goals according to who we are?
Well, the universal goal of everyone is to be happy. You want to be happy. No one wakes up in the morning and says, I want to be unhappy. So then what the Gita does is it begins to unpack that. You want to be happy? Okay, but do you know who you are? If you don't know who you are, how you will be happy? So first you have to know who you are, then you will know what will make you happy. So the Gita, what it does is it starts top level and then starts breaking it down. And the top level goals for everyone are universal. But then as we begin to break it down and we realize that each one of us are individual personalities, we're not just one big blob of energy that are all like, homogeneous entities. No, we're all individual. And therefore, the universal goals are the same, but then as we begin to break it down and figure out our journey towards that goal, we realize there are variations. Just like me and you, we're going for the same goal. We want to have spiritual happiness. We want to develop pure love. And I'm going through the route of renunciation, and you're going through the route of family life. And probably sometimes those on the inside want to be on the outside, and those on the outside want to be on the inside. As they say, the grass is always greener on the other side. But nowadays, my friends tell me the grass is greener where you water it.
Yeah.
But you get my point. We have two very different lives because we're two very different individuals. But our goal is universal. So yes, there is a simultaneously a universal goal and a personalized goal within that goal.
The main goal is we want to be happy. You're right. None of us wake up in the morning thinking, I want to be miserable. I want to be sad. We want to find some happiness. And within that, we want to find our unique contribution. And a lot of the people on the chat today have been asking about this. How do I know what my calling is? What is my part? So that I don't waste time. Some people are saying, I'm wasting so much time trying to find out what I'm meant to do. So what is it that I can do so I can waste less time and really find out what is my calling? What is my contribution to finding that happiness?
Yeah, this is a really nice point. Like Sneha's just put on the chat, like, I feel lost at the moment. Where do I start? And what we want to say to you, Sneha, is that the fact that you're able to even articulate that situation in itself already shows that you are on the way to finding yourself. Most people are lost and they either don't know it or they don't even want to admit it. And they just keep on going, hoping something's magically going to happen. So it begins by feeling that loss. Arjun was lost. He had an existential confusion. Who am I? What's my purpose? What's my meaning? Existential confusion is not bad. It can lead to an existential crisis, or it can lead to an existential awakening, depending on how you deal with that existential confusion. And now, through the guidance of spiritual teachers, Sneha's asking, where do I start? This is where it starts, by accessing wisdom, by going back and asking the big questions. Who am I in truth, in essence? What is this world about? Where am I going? Now, what Krishna explains in the Gita is a word called dharma. Dharma, this should be a program, right? Dharma and Greg. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I never watched that program. But dharma is a super important word. Dharma can mean many things, but literally it means our essence. And what Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita is that each one of us have a spiritual dharma and a material dharma. The spiritual dharma is our overarching spiritual journey and purpose. And our material dharma is our journey in this life, in this body, and our purpose in this life and this body. And what Krishna beautifully explains in the Gita is how we can discover that deeper spiritual dharma and the simultaneous material dharma that we have in this life. He explains there are different occupations, there are different personality types, there are different ways of living. He uses a Sanskrit terminology called Varna Ashram, which is basically a system by which you can understand what is your physical, psychophysical makeup. What are you wired to do? And then you can place yourself appropriately. So by discovering the knowledge of the Gita, you will actually discover yourself. Otherwise, the point I was making in the call is that other people, external people, will define your life, and then naturally you'll feel unfulfilled. Like I tell that story of the mother and father who were saying, like, no, I want Kanchan Abja to be an accountant. No, he should be a lawyer. No, an accountant, the father said. No, a lawyer, the mother said. And then it became so acute that they went to the judge. And the mother said, no, lawyer. The father said, no, accountant. No, I want him to be a lawyer, accountant. And the judge looked at both of the parents and said, you guys are arguing, but why don't you just ask him? Why don't you just ask him what he wants to be? And they looked at the judge incredulously and they said, but he isn't even born yet. And it's interesting because it's like that. Even before sometimes a child is born, already the parents have it mapped out what they should do. And then how will that child live its dharma? So therefore, it doesn't mean we don't listen to our parents. That's not what I'm saying. It doesn't mean we don't take guidance and advice and direction from others. But we have to go in and explore and find ourselves. And you can do that with the help of the Gita.
Thank you. Yeah. I remember something similar, like when I was working as an accountant I worked in different practices, and after about 6 months to a year, I'd get like so fried out, I need to move to another one. And then I realized after a while, maybe I'm not meant to work in this sort of environment. Then I decided to teach and I found myself very happily situated. So I think, and the Bhagavad Gita really helped me understand that. And actually, and like you said earlier, not just the Bhagavad Gita, but those that have studied the Gita, those devotees actually help me understand that actually you'll be happier if you do something that's more in line with your nature. And that's really, really helped me. And I'm sure that's, like Sneha said, what shall I do after university and what career? We have to try and find what we like. This is really, really important. What's our passion and what are we natural at doing? And the Gita really helps us. So thank you, Sutapa Prabhu. So we find ourselves, we find our nature. Maybe I'm 40, 50 when I find this out. You know, we might not be as fortunate at working this out in our teenage life or in our 20s. We might be a bit older. And then we find our purpose and then realize death is around the corner. And, you know, we can't hide away from it. You mentioned it in your class. It's something in the world we try not to talk about so much because it's scary. There's some fear. There's fear around death. What happens? This is a question people have been asking. What happens at the time of death? Yeah. What is it?
Yeah. So like Krishna explains in the Gita that we're not this body. This body is just a covering. It's a car. It's a machine. It's a temporary vehicle that we're operating, but that we're the soul within animating. When the body dies, the soul carries on. Krishna says to Arjuna, never was there a time when you didn't exist, nor me, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. We're eternal beings. It's interesting, even in science, they've been able to corroborate this fact, actually through many scientific studies, that consciousness goes beyond this material frame. There are scientific studies by Nobel laureates of people who have remembered previous lives, people who have had very genuine out-of-body experiences. These are not religious people conducting these studies. These are well-known, world-famous scientists. So the first knowledge Krishna gives is that we're not this body, we're the soul. And as a soul, we're going through different chapters of existence. And this life is basically a life that we've been given, which reflects the desires and activities that we've cultivated in previous lives. And ultimately, this body is an opportunity, and this chapter of life is an opportunity to have a deeper spiritual awakening so that we can rediscover our spiritual connection with an eternal world where we don't have to keep coming back into material bodies. So that was a very famous quote I gave you there from C.S. Lewis, who said, if I find within myself a desire which no experience of the world can fulfill, then I must conclude I was made of a different world. So what happens in life is we come to the point where we realize career, success, money, fame, I've experienced it all. I got the t-shirt, but none of it made me happy. Now I need to look for something deeper. And none of those things will make you happy because Krishna is saying the body is just a machine. You can't, if you're hungry, you can't just fill your car with petrol and expect that you'll be satiated in hunger. It just won't work.
Mm.
So death is basically the journey of one soul from one chapter of life to the next. And it takes that journey to get another opportunity to then rediscover its spiritual essence. And once it rediscovers the spiritual essence, then the soul gets out of the cycle and goes back to its eternal home. And so if you think about it, this concept of karma and reincarnation has incredible explanatory power. Because when you start looking at everything in the world that's going on, everything in your life that's going on from the purview of reincarnation and karma, things start making sense. Things begin to become very clear because you're now seeing the bigger picture.
Okay.